Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. Morning. Welcome to this week's episode of Radio Established to Address Life. I'm your host, Levon, and early to work this morning is Brother Thomas Berry. What's going on, bro?
Hey, what's up, man? How's everything going out there on the East Coast?
It's going, bro. It's going. You know what I'm saying? Life is life. You know, I want to start off by saying my condolences to the Murphy family. The very close to me lost her daughter. So she's been dealing with that since the middle of the week. She lost a daughter in the fight to cancer, and I just want to uplift her and her family as they try to get through this rough patch in life. You know what I'm saying? And at the same time, on the opposite of the coin, absolutely. But on the opposite of the coin, I want to say happy birthday to Ida B. Wells. Obviously, she is no longer with us. However, you know, today is her birthday, and that sister was a powerful sister in the struggle. So I want to shout her out and recognize her on her birthday. We just so happen to be on air on that. See, the premise of today's show is a whole lot going on, a whole lot we have not really been able to get into. We've been blessed to have guests over the past couple of weeks. And, with guests, sometimes it runs a little longer than anticipated, and there's been a lot of things that we've touched on, but we've really never dove into them as of recent. I want to circle back to a number of things this week. In addition to that, I was thinking about life so far in the 2020s, and for me, I don't know about you all, but for me, this shit has been kicking me in the ass here lately. It's a whole lot has happened in my life in the 2020s that I could for real say has been the first time in my life. And, you know, good things have come. You know, I have I don't know how publicly I've shared this, but I have a granddaughter now, and she's 5 months. She just turned 5 months. So it's just crazy seeing her grow up and, you know, being with her and hanging out with her and all that type of jazz. She was at the house the other day, and she was giving my son the blues. Blues! She looked at me and she smiled. She cursing at him, looking at me. She is definitely a handful, dog. It was just hilarious, you know what I'm saying? And you know, he's a first-time father, obviously. He's still young. He's older than me when I had my first kid, much older than me when I had my first kid, but still, you know, young. And green, you know, I'm telling him stuff, and he's like, huh? I'm like, yo, just do what I tell you. And he's going, and he's like, how do you know? And I'm like, dog, it's three of y'all. Remember that, right? You know, I've done this quite a number of times before she got here. So, you know, he's feeding her, man. He's just giving her just milk, you know, like every – I think he said, like, once a day he's giving her cereal in her bottle, and I'm like, yo, that's not working for her. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's hungry, dog. She's hungry for a reason. You're not giving her enough. Slot a little more cereal in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's calling for it. Give it to her. You know what I'm saying? So that's one of those things. But, man, look, that bled into another thing because, you know, I started off with, I don't know how publicly I made that or not, but I got into a conversation from a posting, you know, look, social media, if you're on it enough, you see a lot of stuff. Well, there was a posting the other day, and the sister said something to the effect of, you know, there's a difference between secrecy and privacy when it comes to relationships. You know, I don't want to be a secret, but I do want our relationship to stay private. And I don't know about you, Thomas, but I don't know how good I am at doing that. You dig where I'm coming from? Like,
no, I got you.
One of the things that I have always learned to is everybody don't need to know everything, especially when it comes to my personal life. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not your business. And I'm not trying to put you in the
middle
of my personal life. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm hiding anybody or trying to be deceitful about my relationship status or anything like that, but you don't need to know. You really don't need to. It's my responsibility to take care of my relationship and prevent any ill will or ill happenings or craziness to get involved in it. You know what I'm saying? So no matter if you know or if you don't know what my current relationship status is, if you approach me in a way that is in violation of that, it's my job, my responsibility to distance myself from you because of that. Now, that doesn't mean that I got to totally shut you down and never talk to you again in the room, but I need to let you know gently, like, that's not my interest. You know, we're here to do this, that, and that, not this, that, and that. So I don't know about that at all, you know. And, you know, I said to because I reached out to a couple of people, and I've only say it was a 50-50 response. I think it was more of a 75-25. Most people saying that, you know, they feel that you should be very much public. But as I said to one sister, I was like, yo, you know, not only the way I was raised because of where I was raised at, but then, you know, military service later on in life, that's just not one of those things that you put out there. Because, again, Brother Barry, I don't know about you, but, you know, if they can't hurt you, they hurt the person close to you. Remember what Biggie said? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's real life.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know about that.
Well, I would say that the main thing is that the people who should know.
There you go.
Right? And that's my biggest thing. The people who know should know. And more importantly, I think that it's really pretty much about how else you move outside of that. Like, because you can not have your relationship public, but you can move like you're in a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things. Now, I can get why sisters feel that way, because we're in the time of side chicks. And many of them have been a side chick. Many of them have been a booty call. So that's the response to that. So we got to also take a look at that and say, okay, and meet them halfway, because if that's been that sister's background, or she has friends that's been that background, then she's kind of like, you know, she's kind of seasick from that, because
it's like, man, she done been burnt by that, or she seen somebody else get burnt by that. And I think a lot of times people live vicariously through others. So even if they haven't had that experience, they impact the experiences of their friends. And that's what we have a lot of in our community. Some people have never experienced certain things, but they impact it. And one last point, mm-hmm. Brother Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, is it not the sisters online who have made the art of taking the photo of the food that the man has paid for, the vacation that the man has paid for, or the nice night on the town that the man has paid for, and not picture the man in the photo? So it cuts two ways. It cuts two ways, brother.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong with that. Like, you know, Rodney said, and I was hoping he was going to be on, and he's probably sleeping still. Rodney said that, you know, you gotta factor into the sisters know how sisters are. So when they are looking for that acknowledgement publicly, because they don't want folks to be preying on you, not knowing that you have someone. And my response to that was, well, doesn't that make more people come? Because now, so if she don't like you, she don't like your lady, you know what I mean? Now she going to come because she like, well, I'm going to cause a wreck. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know about that one, bro. I just don't. Like, but again, you know, it's not about hiding you at all, and at least not for me. It's about protecting our sanity and our psyche. It's like, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I'm not one to have everybody at my house. I've never been that dude.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been that dude.
Mm-hmm.
I'll meet you out, and so on and so forth. But I don't have a lot of people bailing in and out of my house. I've just never been that. Never been that. I don't think everybody. I don't think everyone is worthy of knowing where you live. Some people are. Obviously, Brother Barry, if you come to my house. You know what I'm saying? But everybody I know isn't just rolling up at the crib. That's just not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? And I do not feel ill if people don't allow me to come to their homes. I dig it. I totally understand. That is your sanctity. That is your fortress of solitude. Like, I don't. You know, anybody didn't know where Superman lived at. It was for a reason. You know, you don't come knocking on Superman's door. You know what I mean?
Now, he's on the
North Pole and all that type of jazz, but I'm just saying. You know what I mean? Like, anybody didn't know where the Batcave was. It's for a reason. Come on. Really? And I know I'm going, some folks might be like, oh, you want to. No, I'm being real. Like, everybody doesn't need to know where you live at. Just because you know them doesn't mean they need to know where you live, nor do you need to know where the hell they live at. You know, I don't have any little kids anymore. Now, it's different. You know, I want to know who my kids are with and their parents or parent, whatever, and, you know, where they live, blah, 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 but just in case something's going on with my child or their child, I can get in touch with them. So I don't have that situation anymore. So, no, you ain't just rolling up in my house. No. I don't want to come home and have to entertain or any of that jazz. You know what I'm saying? Because if I just want to roll around in some hoochie daddy shorts or nothing and some flip flops, then, you know, that's what I do at my crib. You know, and I don't want to have to scramble to clean it up or, you know, 24/7 make sure it's clean, an inspection order. Come on, man. You know, I work too hard for that. There's days when it's a mess, and I'm okay with it being a mess on those days. But then there's the days I come through and clean up like a freaking whirlwind and keep it pressing. You know what I'm saying? And it's more of those days than when it's a mess. So, yeah, nah, man.
So,
whatever.
But, you know, but brother, I tell you, man, the toughest thing now in relationships is just being able to speak on the same frequency. Because everybody has their rhyme or reason on what they do and how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, especially when it's a mutual situation, everybody should, it's just the communication piece, and then everybody has to be able to move in the way that they're comfortable. And I feel like we kind of got out of that for men, where men are not necessarily operating in their comfort. Men are actually reacting to what women want them to react to. And that's why relationships tend to burn out, because when you have people one person is operating in their comfort, the other person is operating on where the other person wants them to act. It's like, how long can Lee not be Lee? Because Lee's going to have to be Lee sooner or later. And Lee's going, and so if the young lady is going to be happy in a relationship, it's going to require you to be happy as well. And I don't think that we talk enough about that in relationships. We just talk about happy wife, happy life. And I tell you, most men will tell you, man, a lot of times it's happy wife, miserable husband. And that's why we have the invention of the side chick so much, is because brothers are not happy. They're sitting in home. I mean, I know there's publications about women being happy or unhappy. Mm-hmm. Men just don't talk about their displeasure as much because, you know, as a man, it's not manly to complain.
Right. Well, I'm a Virgo, so that's a little different for me because we complain all the time. That's just what we do. That's our nature. That's our nature. It's like, it's nothing malicious about it. I have to be clear about that. You know, I tell people that all the time. Like, yo, look, dig it. I'm a natural complainer. There's nothing malicious about what I'm saying to you. I need to be clear about that. I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. I'm not trying to undermine your attempts. Nothing of that nature. But I'm going to be honest with you in a manner in which you understand where I stand. So my sister, just take my sister, right? My sister, I'm at my sister's house a couple of years ago, and, you know, she's crying. My baby, she's always fucking crying. You don't come visit me, blah, blah. So I come up straight the weekend. And, no, that's not true. I stay the night. So she cooks breakfast the next morning, you know what I'm saying? She cooked some eggs and some turkey sausage, blah, 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 boom. And I'm like, yo, that's what's up. That's the best. These eggs come out, and I'm like, okay, a little different, but whatever. Man, I'll eat them damn things. And she has garlic and some other stuff all up in there. I'm like, yo, what did you do? She's like, oh, I like my eggs. Yo, it's not just you right here. It's me too. You didn't ask me. Yo, you want me to scramble some eggs? What do you want in your eggs? She pulled all this stuff up in there. I'm like, yo, I'm not eating that. I'm not eating that. No. And she was hurt. And I was like, why? What you mad about? Like, that's not what I do. Come on, you know me. You grew up with me. We don't get down like that. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. But again, you're right. It's not natural for us to complain. But I have grown to understand that I will make my position known. And I try to lay down the foundation from jump. Just because I'm making my foundation or my place known doesn't mean that I'm not appreciative of what you're doing or what you've done. It's just that if I never tell you, then you never know. You know what I'm saying? However, you know, sisters being receptive to that is difficult because, like you said, it's happy her who gives a damn about him. And I don't know where that all started from. You know what I'm saying? But there needs to be a medium in there somewhere. Yeah, okay, the medium movies, I agree with that.
It's Hollywood, and the sad part about it is that it doesn't necessarily swing into real life, and you see it in the imbalance of why everybody sits back and then everyone becomes miserable. And now we're saying, well, dang, she got this and she got that, and they did this and they did that. And not one time did anybody say, well, hey, what did he want to do? Hey, did he want this, you know, or did she do anything that he wanted? And so you have that. Because, man, you know, we like to provide for our ladies. Like, when you're really into it, you want to provide for them. But I say all that to say, man, relationships, I've been reading some good books on relationships. And one book, I think I told you guys about it, it's called Rethinking Sex. And the sister, man, in the book is so cold, man. She talked about how women are so liberated from a feminism prospect. She said, but they're still miserable. And she said, how does liberation come with misery? And so we have to
get back
to that balance.
Because, you know, like Mike Tyson said, and I got to acknowledge the fact that Sister Rashi is on with us now. Good morning, sister. Mike Tyson said, you know, God is going to test you by giving you everything that you want and to see if you can handle it. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you wanted this liberation, so you get this liberation now, right? So now it's like, okay, we're free, but but I didn't want that, and I didn't want you to stop doing that. Well, that's what that means. You know what I mean? Like, when you take the position of, well, I can and you don't need to and I don't need you for, then okay, then you don't need me, then I'll put that energy in something different. See, this is what I think a lot of sisters, I'm sorry, that's, yes, a lot of women, when I say sisters, I'm using it as a blanket statement, a lot of women just don't get it. Like, if you say to me that you don't need me for this, then I'm going to take that energy and transfer it into something else. Because I'm not going to keep fighting with you to show you that I'm trying to help you. That's not going to happen. Not going to happen. I'm not going to keep fighting with you to show you that I'm here for you and trying to help you. It's not going to happen. That's not what we do. You know, you're going to say, no, I'm good, 2-3 times. It's like, okay, your ass is good, and I'm going to leave your ass alone. I'm going to let you be good. And when you over there struggling, is you 5'2" and something on the top shelf? No, no, boo-boo. You said you were good. Work it out. Now you can't add it to me. What you mad at me for? I gave you what you wanted. You said I can handle this. I can do everything you can do. Okay, do it. Put your little 5'2 ass. Get your ass on that top shelf to get whatever it is you're trying to get. Work that out. I want to see it. Impress me. Impress me. You said you got it. Go for it. I'll stay right here and watch you. I'm not going to let you fall and hurt yourself. No, I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to let you work it out by yourself because that's what I want. You told me you didn't need me. So I removed myself from that equation. And I started putting my energy into something different. You know, and then, you know, so that's something different. Now, that varies because that could be the side piece. That's something different could be, you know, a side project. That's something different could be, working longer, harder, or whatever. It really could be whatever. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be a person. It could be a thing. You know what I'm saying? So then, here's another feeling. Well, you don't ever have time for me. Well, when I had time for you, I was trying to give you my time. You rejected me. So now, I wouldn't put that energy and time into something different. Now you're mad about that. I don't understand what you want. What do you want? What do you want? Do you know? Because, shit, I'm confused. And I keep telling you, we are not that smart. We are not that – you all give us way too much credit. We are not that smart. Y'all got to tell us. You know, Roddy and I were speaking yesterday, and he was saying that one of the things in relationships is the simple fact that men are not the predators in relationships. Women are. It's the woman that sees the man, says, this is the man I'm going to get, and starts laying the trap. She starts giving you hints, smile, a flicker of the hair, whatever. She starts laying the trap. And then you come along, you fall into the trap. Now she got your life. And she got you. And you know, when done right, like it used to be done, when done right, she gives you the impression that it was your thought all the time. Why? Because that's how stupid we are. That's why we need y'all. This is why we need y'all. When you all do it right, you all give us the impression that that was our organic, original thought. We saw you. We thought you were the greatest thing since sliced bread, and we could do nothing but run towards you. You give us that impression, and I applaud you all when you do it right, because it's a wonderful thing. You know, we walk away feeling like we've accomplished something. You walk away knowing that you got what you wanted. It's a win-win for everybody. When it's done wrong, it's problems. Do you ever watch Paternity Court? See, since Morrigan off, I'd have had to get some more ratchetness in my life. Yeah. I'm watching Paternity Court. Look, I'm telling you, look, I need just a smidge of ratchetness. I don't need a whole lot of ratchetness. Just a smidge. And Paternity Court is my smidge of ratchetness. So this sister is on there the other day. Brother is suing the mother because he's trying to determine paternity for the daughter. Now, the daughter's grown. Two different cases. I'm going to start with the first one. So the mother is saying that the brother is not the father. She's like, he ain't the father. Blah, 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 blah. He even told the daughter he's not the father. It's another man, blah, blah, blah. Come to find out, he's actually. And the brother was married, and his wife was actually talking trash to about the young lady. But then the wife came to realize that if this is my husband's daughter, I'm a rock with it. And when they found out he was the father, the wife was just as elated as the husband, as her husband was, to find out this is actually her daughter, his daughter. So then the mother was just standing there stupid, like, okay, well, I thought it was the other guy, you know, because we were together, blah, blah, blah. The other one, same situation, brother, he's single though, Sue's the mother, grown daughter. And this mother clearly said, I don't know who your father is. The brother was not her father. And the mother still does not know who the father is. She just didn't know. You know what I'm saying? So now you have a broken child out in this world trying to figure out who has real daddy issues, because she has no idea who her dad is. You know what I'm saying? How do we put our children in situations? You know, now,
well,
I'm not saying I'm a saint by no stretch of the imagination, but then you get,
right.
You know, you get keeping in a family situation because this young lady could literally go out and have a child with a brother that she never knew was her brother. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Like, she literally could do that. And neither one of them would know. You know?
That's something common in our community, right? But I think the main thing, and it goes back to the relationship dynamics, is still communication as well as what's the next phase. Because if I was in a situation where I had a young baby, and let's say hypothetically the mother just didn't want nothing to do with the child, and I was dealing with the child, even though that child may not be biologically the next woman I'm with the child, I would only want to deal with women that would take on this role. And I know women, they say no and brothers say no, but I'm always believe whatever's taken away from you, God provides. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And so I'm pretty sure there's been plenty of men that was in her mother's life that probably should have been in her mother's life that would have played that father role. It wouldn't have totally fulfilled, and I know in this society we're so extreme, we want 100% fulfillment, but there's plenty of surrogate mm-hmm. children running around here with sperm donors, mothers going to get artificially inseminated, and they don't know who their biological father is, but they still have a father figure in their life. And in our community, we almost tabooed and ran away from that as if there's something wrong with stepping up. Yeah, but we'll be the same people yelling, it takes a village. Well, it also takes a village, mom, dad, when you have children and you're not with the mother, you know, like my girlfriend now, you know, when my daughter's here, she comes to get my daughter, she takes her out with her daughters, and they do things together. And I wouldn't be upset with my son or my daughters, you know, if their mother had a boyfriend that was doing something similar. Because that's what you're supposed to do in those roles. Unfortunately, we have less of that in our society today.
I don't want to give a pass to the brothers in this situation because there's some bratty cats out there. Elon Musk's dad just had another child with his stepdaughter. He and his stepdaughter now have two children together. Now, Lord have mercy. Now, is he and Woody Allen, are they hanging out? I'm trying to understand what's going on right here.
Hey, Elon Musk's dad is going to tell you, at least he ain't Ricky Martin sleeping with his nephew. But,
his nephew? Are you serious? Ricky Martin, did you all not know this? Ricky Martin now has a restraining order against him, put on him by his 21-year-old nephew, because allegedly they have a sexual relationship that has ended. His nephew, I'm going to say it again, his nephew, they had a sexual relationship that has ended, and Ricky Martin is supposedly stalking and harassing this young man.
I believe it. I'm
going
to tell you why. We can go back to Elon Musk's father
talk to
in a second. And this is the problem why men definitely have issues that we have to talk about. But there is a Netflix documentary out about the boy band that Ricky Martin came out with. And they were talking about in this boy band. Yes. And they were talking about how a lot of the young boys who came on later in the group was being sexually assaulted and primed inside of that group. And Ricky is the most famous out of all of them. So we should not be shocked that if he had that happen to him, that he wouldn't go on and do it to someone else, because it goes back to R. Kelly. Victims of sexual predatory situations also victimize other people. It's commonplace. So I'm not shocked. When I saw the story, I said, now it all makes sense, because it was happening to him. He just never reported it.
As a boy dad, I've often worried about my sons being touched as well. You know what I'm saying? I was not so arrogant nor ignorant to the fact that little boys get touched too. And like, yo, oof, Lord, it's one of those things I never wanted to deal with. Now, if I had to cross that bridge, then I had to cross that bridge, but definitely one of those things I never, ever, ever wanted to deal with. So let's go back to Ricky Martin's dad. How do you even approach your stepdaughter? I mean, how does that work, dog? What are you doing? You taking her to camp one day and like, you know, hey, I think you found it in your mama. I mean,
if we're being honest about a lot of what's happening, it's about power. Honestly, it's about power. And you can kind of see it in the display of his son. Or you brought up the Woody Allens or the Bill Cosbys. Men conquer two ways. Men conquer through their penis, or they conquer through the gun.
Their wallet.
And so you got these men with these vulnerable young girl, impressionable. I'm pretty sure this man probably, you know, if he has some of the wealth that started for his son, this guy provided things that mom probably couldn't, and probably even provided for mom. And so it was one of those situations where wealthy people, like, you know, he could buy his way into anything, and he was very impressionable on this girl. He didn't see her as a daughter. He just saw her as another, you know, piece of meat. And unfortunately, that happens far more than what it's than what's being reported.
Sister Rosh, morning to you. I know you've been listening. You've been riding with us. I appreciate that. So you know, as you would say in your Southern vernacular, older gentlemen. I love when Rashid says stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? That's that Midwest Southern vernacular. Older gentlemen coming. Was that a problem for you or your daughter? Older gentlemen approaching you at an age in which it was not appropriate?
My mother had opted not to have men in the house for real. She had a couple of gentlemen. She had a couple of boyfriends, but they could not come. They couldn't spend a night because she was pretty vigilant about her daughter. We did not have to worry about uncles. I called them put it in quotation marks, uncles in the house. But now my daughter, the two gentlemen that I dealt with when I was bringing men in the house, I just kind of sat them down and let them know that I'll kill them. You know, I'll kill you about my daughter. I will kill you. I will do the time and we'll figure
totally
it out again. I will.
Totally
I'll fucking stab your throat about my daughter. I don't. It's not a game. And if you have any kind of question, if you're worried about me talking to you about it, let's get done with this, because I'm going to tell you if I feel like she's sitting on your lap or it's too much secret conversations behind the back. You know, if I feel like you're priming her for a relationship outside, so stepfather, I'm going to kill you. And I'm a fairly intelligent woman. I can do it and still get away with it. And so I just let them know. I mean, I don't even play about my kids. If you touch my children, I'm going to try to kill you. And that's because I don't want to, because all the stuff you have to do with people after you done touched them, that's for the rest of their life they don't trust. That's for the rest of their life they don't bond. And the more and the closer that infraction is to the primary bond, meaning when your daddy touch you or your uncle touch you or your auntie touch you, it destroys. You don't move from that. The closer the bond is to the primary bond, the more work you have to do on the individual, you know, to get them to be able to trust and deal with people, anybody else, everybody else, any and everybody else, period. And so I just let them know. I only had one older gentleman try to play that when I was beyond, you know, well too young. You know what I'm saying? Just one, and it was a family friend that had came in that was on hard times that was staying in the household. But I let them know, my mama going to try to kill you. I mean, you're not going to, this is not going to be, not going to be able to get your talk. If anybody find out, people are going to try to kill you. And so do you do that? And that killed that. And that ended that whole conversation. Now, I can't say that I was that, because I have a fairly extensive vocabulary, they don't always know when you don't always know when you're talking to a child if they are in an intelligent, in, you know, child that can influence. All children ain't the same. I'm going to just say that. I don't want to blame the victim. I'm going to just say all children ain't the same. When you're dealing with them ones that Barry was just talking about, they see where the money go. They see how power flow. They don't want to be a minion. They want to get in where they fit in. They want to be with the big guy, right? And so in order to do that, you have to be ready. You have to be ready to sit on a nasty old man's lap. You got to be ready to giggle at dumb jokes. You got to be ready to be primed. Some children are and some children aren't. And what I hate is that even if you are, if you're an adult and you're around a child that's ready to be primed, it's up to you. They're not going to make it easy. They're going to be looking all in your face and trying to sit on your lap. They're going to do the things that powerless people do to gain influence. But it's up to us. It's up to us to stop letting powerless people try to get power on our perverseness. I don't know how to explain that any better. If you got a vice that some powerless person is able to take, you know, control of, then it's on you. It's you. You know, it's you. You're the problem. Not even the other person. It's you. It's your vice that keeps you from being, as they say in America, an upstanding American citizen, whatever that is. So, I did not get touched. No, I'm hoping, because I don't have any bodies under my old apartments, that nobody touched my children. However, I do not trust. Like, you know how they say, I had a gentleman tell me, here, if you don't want to have a baby, just give me the baby. I don't really play. I don't trust. I don't have an overall trust of men around children long term alone. I know that don't sound right. Because it don't sound right at all. Because you're like, what about the fathers and the blah, blah, blah? Yeah. I have a fundamental distrust of men alone with girl or boy children for long term. I just feel like something happens in the development of the little person that sparks some type of interest in the older person. And it starts that, what you was just talking about, Barry, that cascade of priming. So that means even though I wasn't touched, wait a minute. So that means even though I wasn't touched, I still have residual fear and mistrust without it even being me. It rubs off on people without it even being their individual study story.
So let me say this, because I got 2 points I want to make, and this is working with Child Protection Services, what I've noticed. I've noticed that there are some teenagers who understand that there's people in the world who see that and they take advantage of it, so fathers are unable to father their children. What I mean by that is your teenage daughter may be doing too much in the world on her phone, et cetera, et cetera. You take the phone away, you put her on punishment, and next thing you know, Child Protection Services is at your door saying that you touched on her. Happens a lot. Especially some of the cases that I've seen where these men have, one, done the psychosexual therapy, had other children as witnesses, et cetera, and even the child has admitted to other people that it wasn't true, but it's because of this idea of what Rashi was saying, because a lot of people have this fear about men and children. The other thing that I would say, and I'm saying this as a father, Lee, I know you said you are a boy dad. I got one daughter. And then I have one daughter, but I would say I got newly two stepdaughters, per se, right? And I know with my daughter that because of that perception, there's a certain way that I think I parent my daughter in ways that I don't my sons. And what I mean by that is I don't necessarily believe that I'm closer to my daughter than I am my son, because it's a touchy situation. Huh?
What would your son say, though?
You know, my sons would say the same thing, because you can't level it's a level of affection that I can give my sons. I can tell my sons I love them. I can high five them. I can give them dap. We always hug when we see each other. And I think that it's a little bit different, because as a man, A, you don't want to create an atmosphere where your daughter feels like it's okay for other men to touch her in affectionate ways when they're not supposed to, but B, it's also this perception in society where men are seen as sexual predators. And the funny part about it is we're seen as sexual predators, but I can tell you, you could put 10 young men in a room, 7 out of the 10 young men will tell you that they had an inappropriate relationship with an adult woman when they were an adolescent.
I would be one of those 7.
And I would be one of those 7 as well. And not only one woman, but multiple women.
Right.
So
now hold on. Now this was the opportunity for Sister Rashi to be like, "What you talking about?" So let me see. I think.
Yeah, I know. I've been around them. See.
Right.
Elder women who, and he's out there. He mad. His mama just put him out, and she like, "You don't have to go to no hotel. Come over here." And he go from the couch to in her room, and it I don't know how. I got like 3 black women who didn't have to bang on call, go to the house with the police to go get their son out of a house where their son is with a young girl, being and the relationship is sanctioned by an older woman who don't make him go home to his mama, or he in there with her. The older woman, she in there, you know, buttering his roll up all night, and so and buying PS4. So it's not. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. So for me, the first one was I was 13. She was 19, 18, 19. The second one was I was 15, 16. She was 23. And the last one was huge. It was right before I went in the military. So I was 16, 17. She was 40. Yeah. How about you, Brother Barry?
Man, brother, where do I start? I would say 12, 19-year-old, 15, and 25-year-old. 16, 30-year-old. I mean, the sad part about it is, and I want to say this again, because as men, we deal with it in a different way. But I still want to go back to what I said about parenting daughters, is that because we have this level of distrust, are girls being groomed properly to have proper relationships with men if the fathers who are showing healthy sexual affection can't show that? What are we doing to our daughters? Do we set them up to have healthy relationships?
Good question. Good question. You said 16 with a 30-year-old?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You said, oh, yeah. Like, Lord, I thought I was bad.
Oh, man. Back in the day, bro, it used to go down. And unfortunately, you know, at that age, you know, you think you're getting over, so you don't look at it as something crazy.
Right.
But
right.
The reality,
you think you're the man.
You think you're the man at that age.
You know what I'm saying? You doing
that's,
something.
But well, because you think you're conquering. Goes back to the penis or the gun. You either conquering with the penis or the gun. And so when you take away a man's conquering of the penis, right? If he doesn't have something else productive and put his exploits in, he goes to the gun.
Right.
This is the natural progression of manhood per se. A man has to conquer or tackle something. You have a great task oriented, right? Or you go to. But with that being said, you think you're doing everything right with that penis, man. When somebody lets you have entry, we don't be understanding sometimes. You know, I tell this to my sons. Going off to college, like, listen, man, that girl that says you and everybody on the football team can hit it, that girl's bipolar. You may not know it, but there's something wrong with her mentally. So you're pretty much dealing with someone that's having a mental health episode. Don't do it. But because you feel like you're fly and you're the man or y'all the man, when we get into sex, we feel like it's about us, and it's really not. It's really about the woman.
You know, and for me, I've continued my trend of I prefer being with an older woman, and I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because my relationship with my birth mother. Maybe I don't know if it's just because I feel like I've been an old ass man my entire life. So, in all honesty, it's like. What most of my contemporaries are talking about or on, I'm just not there with them at all. I've always been more laid back and mellow. So I don't know if that's it or not, but it gives me something to think about for real. It definitely does give me something to think about. I don't think I was ever touched in an inappropriate way by a female nor a male. In my life, to be honest with you, nothing I can recall. You know, I may have blocked it out, but there's nothing I can recall respect to that. But good question. It's something for me to grow on, to be honest with you. Yo, did you know that R. Kelly was engaged to one of his alleged victims? Talking about priming people. So Kelly is allegedly engaged. To Jocelyn Savage. That she wrote a letter of support for Kelly trying to get a more lenient sentence to the judge. And in the letter, she revealed that they were engaged. That was her testimony or her statement to the judge. So we'll see if Kelly gets married. You know, Kelly got 30 years. I don't know how I feel about that one. You know, I really don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I would say, brother, the only thing that I don't like about the R. Kelly situation is that all of these prominent people in the Me Too movement, only two have went to jail, R. Kelly and Bill Cosby. And our goal is, girls.
Weinstein went to jail.
Who went to jail? Well, Weinstein went to jail. He didn't get to prison because, remember, he supposedly hung himself in jail, right?
Right.
But we're talking about, was that Weinstein who hung himself? No, that wasn't Weinstein. It was old boy who girlfriend who just got convicted. Right? Weinstein is free.
He's still alive.
It was the wife. the white boy who had all the presidents and all these wealthy people, he's the one who ended up hanging himself in jail.
Okay. I don't remember his name.
Is the director. He's the movie producer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Weinstein didn't do jail time. He's still out and about, and we ain't heard nothing about a trial. Now, mind you, his stuff was out. His stuff was out, if I'm not mistaken, before Cosby and R. Kelly, but we ain't heard of Harvey Weinstein trial whatsoever.
Well, no, hold on now. I'm reading up on it. He's supposed to be at Wendy Correctional Facility in New York. He's supposed to be locked up. Yeah.
Really?
Criminal status, incarcerated at Wendy Correctional Facility. Yeah.
Hmm. So they must have started his trial yet, man.
Hmm. Now, if you were in prison already, he got convicted.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it came and gone. It wasn't much fanfare about that, was it?
Yeah, and then hey, look, because his company's still out there making money. Shit. he stood trial in 2020, and the jury found him guilty of two felonies, a criminal sexual act in the first degree and third degree rape, and acquitted him on two charges of predatory sexual assault in Los Angeles.
That was June 8, 2022, right?
He was convicted in February 2020. He was sentenced to 23 years in New York State Prison.
Look how that came and gone, and it ain't been much fanfare. We knew all about R. Kelly and his business.
Mm-hmm.
Business and all.
Mm-hmm.
So still R. Kelly and Bill Cosby is the face of me, too.
And I forgot, who was that boy? You got me thinking of who that boy that killed. But it doesn't matter. Anyhow, one of his alleged victims, he's engaged to. So we were talking about Prime and earlier, you know, how do we see that? You know what I'm saying? Because R. Kelly is broke. He's been his name has been drugged through the mud, and somebody love him. So I don't know what that's all about. We'll see if they actually get married, and we'll see how much time Kelly actually do. I mean, that was his first case. He has another case still coming up. So we'll see, how much time he actually does. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, so let's move off that.
I was going to say, too, because I know with the other guy that we can't find his name, his girlfriend just got convicted, too, of being an accessory.
Speaking of the court,
so
we really did not touch much on Ketanji Brown Jackson being appointed to the Supreme Court. I want to start with Rashi. How did you feel about that? First black woman to sit on the court. How do you feel about that?
I'm excited about Ms. Brown, Jackson Brown, personally. I find that when black women join organizations, work gets done. I don't, you know, it depends on what the organization is, but it's something about the nature of black women that unless it's the government where we have
But this would be the government. I mean, she's in the...
And we tend to put in some really good work. And I'm excited to see what the first and only black woman can do when it comes to swaying the hearts and minds of her fellow, you know, adjudicates. But let's not be confused about what it takes to become a judge. You don't get to keep your cornrows and coffin nails. When you become a judge, a president.
Just having a problem with
the phone. The chair requires, hello?
No, you're fine. Keep going.
The chair requires you to morph your character and to change yourself in such a way so that you can listen to everybody's opinion and not be, you know, biased on your own bias for your own reality. So I don't think she's biased. She has a
she's fading in and out. And that's okay. She may be moving
on. Reality wrapped up in right. She is, you know, diverse in her relationships, and that can play itself out in her being diverse in her opinion and her ability to see past bias, which is what they're trying to do. They're trying to tease out bias and eradicate it from legislature. Not be your friend, not make everybody happy.
Thomas, what do you think?
Well, I think Brother Lee is...
Right, and make sure that there is not, you know, a non...
Go ahead, Tom.
What I think is that, you know, when you have a situation when we got a first anything, we haven't never... The first black anything has never bared fruit to black people. And so I'm interested, but I'm not excited. I remember being in high school and Clarence Thomas, when he got on the Supreme Court, and I remember a lot of us siding with him over Anita Thomas saying that she was trying to set the brother up. Well, guess what? Anita was right and we were wrong. Okay? And I always say when I see black folks who got white folks on their arm, I pause. They got to work 2 to 3 times hard than the average black person to prove to me that they are, as Sister Rashi said about bias, but I hope that the bias is not against our people, because some of us who tend to engage in those types of relationships, they loathe us as a people. They don't have a lot of love nor respect for us. And so I just want to see her in action. Same thing that I don't want to get into the love affair that we have when we have first black anything, because we did that with Kamala Harris being the VP pick. Mm. And have anybody seen Kamala? She was on the back of milk cartons all around the country. And so we constantly get sold this, whether it's the sorority bit or whether it's the sister gal, and we don't know necessarily the politics of this woman and how she thinks personally. And so I would say just take a wait-and-see attitude, because usually they pick those of us that is malleable to white supremacy.
You know, my stance on Kamala was clear from the beginning. I didn't like her. I didn't think she was a good pick at all. I didn't think that she would do much of anything. And thus far, we're, what, two years in? Because we're at the midterm point right now. What has she done? Honestly, like, and I understand the office of the vice president doesn't always have to be front and center, so on and so on. I dig all that. But you also have to weigh the fact that Joe is old. Why would he not give her the opportunity to play front and center, to make her a true transitional piece, not only for his legacy, but also for the Democratic Party, period. You know what I'm saying? She's younger, much younger. You would assume that she would have more energy. You would assume that she would have fresher ideas. Why not give her an opportunity to really showcase those? You know, I think Obama gave him much more room and rope to move, especially in his second term, than in the first term. And I think it would have done him well, trying to set him up for his presidential run. I think it would have done him well if he took the same stance with Kamala, giving her an opportunity to get out front, to play point, to be seen as being presidential, even though she is not the president at this moment. Now, there's a lot of speculation as to what he's going to do, because, again, he is older. You know, I was at the gas station yesterday, went to Virginia. Side note, I missed my flight to Florida. Not happy about that at all, but life happens. And I decided to spend time with family in Virginia. So I'm coming down. I see gas, less than $4. Okay, it was $3.99, but still, less than $4. So I stopped at the gas station, and I'm in line, and this guy's up front, and he's spouting that he thinks that Joe Biden is trying to get his son to be the next president. How does that work? This isn't a company. This is an election. This is how we select our leaders. We elect them. You just can't transfer power from one person to the next. That doesn't work. His son right now is not currently in any seat of power in the federal government, at all. So unless all of a sudden he decides to leave his spot in Delaware, he's the governor of Delaware, to then run for the presidency, how is that even possible? And he can't just pass it on to him. He still has to be selected, and then he has to be elected, neither of which he is positioned himself to do as of yet. You know, Joe has yet to announce what he's going to do as far as the next election is concerned, but it's due to come sooner rather than later because we are at the point of the midterms. You know it's midterm time because now all of a sudden, not only do you see the signage, but you're hearing from people whom are elected officials now. You're seeing them more often. They didn't return your phone calls when you called them 3-4 weeks ago. But I wouldn't say that. 3-4 months ago. They didn't return your phone calls. They'll return your phone call now. They'll mail you back now. Someone from the office will reach out to you now because it's election season. And if they're due for re-election, they're answering phone calls. They're responding to emails. They're taking interview requests. They're doing everything they can to get reelected right now. But again, had you reached out to them just a couple months ago, it would be, I'm out in at a celebration a couple weeks back. That's not true. It wasn't even a couple weeks back. It was 4th of July weekend. So, yeah, a couple weeks back. And our state's attorney, under fire here in Baltimore, under fire. She's always under fire election time. She was under fire last election cycle. She's under fire again this election cycle. This time she has federal charges pending against her. However, she's been able to turn the tide on a number of them thus far. So it really bodes the question of how strong was the case when she's knocking stuff down left and right, right and left, right? But anyhow, I saw her the other day, and it just so happened that the bus, her and her husband, both are elected officials in the city of Baltimore. The bus company that they chose was called High Road Transportation. How hilarious was that? As much fire as she's taken right here and right now, they rolled in on the high road. I was like, yo, that is hilarious. And neither of them picked up on it. I picked up on it. That was just funny. But, I told her, I said, yo, you know, it's great to see you, because it is. It's great to see her. But, you know, we're going to have a conversation after the election, because no matter what happens, I need to know your stance on this, that, and the third. But that happened before the governor actually stepped in and took away the additional restrictions on concealed carry permits in the state of Maryland. So I still want that conversation, but it's not as pressing as it was before, if that makes any sense. You know, one of the reasons I've been trying to leave Maryland so strongly is because of its stance against concealed carry, you know what I'm saying? And now that that's been eased and or lifted, it gives me cause to pause. However, it's still my goal to go west. Like, I've made it clear that my goal is to get out there with Rodney. I really want to go to Vegas. It's time. And he's on now, by the way. But, you know, I've told him privately that he needs to slow down a little bit. So it's fitting for me to go out to help him slow down a little bit because I think I can have that influence. I really think I can have that influence in a positive manner. You know, some of the things that he's doing, if he had help with, I think he would slow down. So it's time for him to slow down just a tad bit. You know, he's run a great race. And this should be a relay at this point. You know, he at least deserves a gate. what is that? He at least deserves a Gatorade break, if anything. Morning, Brother Rodney. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Brother Lee. How are you?
Outstanding. Brother Barry's already on with this. Sister Rashi had to bail out. She's on the road, so she's listening, not able to talk much right now. So we were going in on a number of things. Like I said, I really wanted to catch up this week to stuff that's happening. You know, we talked about R. Kelly. We talked about, goodness gracious, we just talked about the Supreme Court Justice. We talked about relationships with respect to the imbalance of happy wife, not so happy husband. The other side of the other side of the coin is, if you don't realize, you don't recognize, we are 9 years and 9 months into this thing. In October will be our 10th year doing this thing. And I had to stop and think about that for a second, because, you know, there's been a lot of changes within the show, within the world, over those 9 years and those 9 months. And I'm forever grateful to anybody that's ever listened, to anybody who's ever shared the airwaves with us to offer their opinion or their knowledge, for anybody who's told a friend or just so happened to search and find us. I'm forever grateful for that. You know, this has been one heck of a ride. It really has been. It continues to be one heck of a ride. I was laughing to myself just the other day because Anthony Anderson decided to not go back to Law and Order. He said he has some new projects that he wants to work on. And I was laughing. I was saying to myself, I said, well, he can't start a new project without Rodney and I being in the presence of him. Because when he started Black-ish, you see what I'm going? When he started Black-ish, Rodney and I were there for the screening of Black-ish. See how successful Black-ish was? So Anthony Anderson and you and your people are listening. You need to make sure that Rodney and I are in the presence of whatever project you're about to do, because we seem to be your good luck charms, bro. You know what I'm saying? And you ain't got to put us up nothing fancy, but just give us an invite and we'll make our way there. You know what I mean? So yeah, definitely. That was hilarious, though. I was like, yo, that's crazy just how quickly time has elapsed, right? Because literally,
yeah, it is.
We were there for the screening for Black-ish. We were right there. Hell, I think we were like, we weren't even far back in the room. We were very close up to the front in the room. It's not in the front. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's just crazy, you know. But I'm looking forward to the next 10 and seeing where that goes. You know what I'm saying? Because this has been everything that I had hoped for it to be honest with you. And then some. You know, I didn't think that some of the things we were able to do, we've done. And it looks like, for my birthday, I'll be doing the show from London. I just got the phone call. Yeah, I just got a phone call, and it looks like I'll be in London for my birthday. So it looks like for my birthday, I'll be doing the show from London. So that'd be a totally different twist and twingle and all that type jazz, but I'm looking forward to it. You know what I'm saying? But who do you know on a shoestring budget that does stuff like we do? So, look, man, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I'm blessed. I'm grateful. I'm humbled. I'm happy. I don't know how many more H's I could use, but, you know, it is what it is. Roddy, what you got going on out there, bro? What's going on in Vegas? How did the night fire go?
Well, actually, it did not go because, you know, we don't get much rain in Vegas. And the one time it decided to rain this year happened to be when we're supposed to have our nighttime shoot. So lightning got too close, and the range master had to shut it down. So we did not shoot this week at all.
Okay.
But there's always another week and just a level of excitement. But I do want to share one thing about that, though, that did stand out. I went to the range Wednesday night for the first night shoot that we didn't do. And while I was there waiting on the folks to show up and eventually did not show up, a young lady there working behind the counter, a white woman, and I've known her for some years, she says, "Are you going to be a part of the group that you were with the last time?" And I said, "Yes, it's the Bass Reeves Shooting Club." She says, "Well, good, because y'all sure need to be out here practicing."
Wow.
And the reason, so
wow.
Lee, why,
I like that.
And Brother Barry, why do you think she said that? Why do you think she said that?
Because she knows what's coming. Because she knows what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what's coming.
She knows.
And she knows that, you know, we as a community take guns as a taboo type situation. You know, we're not embracing them like those around us. You know what I'm saying? And if that balloon ever pops, in mass, we'd be overrun because there's too many people on our side of the coin that have no idea what to do with them in their hands. They don't want to see them. They don't want to think about them. They don't want to touch them. They don't want to be in the same building with them. They ain't got to be in the same room. They don't want to be in the same daggone building. They run away. They hide. I don't want to be near that. I don't want to touch that thing. Guns are dangerous. Okay. A gun is nothing more than a hammer. Nothing more than a hammer. You can get killed with a hammer, depending on who's wielding the hammer. You can get killed with a gun, depending on who's wielding the gun. You can get shot by someone wielding a gun. They could not be any damn good. You could still live. You know what I'm saying? Just because you get shot doesn't mean you're going down. It don't work that way. It's not a movie. You know, Roddy, we were talking about that the other day, how the media is so influential in our lives. This isn't a movie. Just because you get shot don't mean you're going to die. Someone can shoot you 13 times and never hit near vital organs. two pop to six. He still lives. You know? Now, no one wants to get shot 13 times. Let's be clear about that. But it could happen. It could very well happen. You get shot multiple times and live. Just like it ain't nothing.
Yeah.
So one of the things she also said was, and then I'll let you get in, Brother Barry, because I want to hear your comment on this too. She said, look, she said, if you need to, I will come down and shoot with
Ooh.
You all.
Ooh.
Go ahead,
that's
Brother
power
Barry.
Right there.
Well, I would say that a couple things. I always remember the real reason why Charles Manson kicked off his war. If anybody forgot, you know, remember Charles Manson was saying that he knew that it was going to be a race war coming, and white folks feared that we're going to beat them. And I would say everybody's prepared for it except us, but part of the reason why we're not prepared for it is because we live in a society where we can't prepare for much. We're inundated with the things that we don't have too much. We're often reminded. The next thing that I would say is the taboo piece for us, Brother Lee, I think is more about the mass incarceration for guns than anything else. I think black folks just don't want to go to jail, and each state, each city has their own laws, their own rules, and it's kind of confusing for us on what we can do with guns and how we can own guns. And black people, unfortunately, we have not done enough research in every city and state that we live in on just the laws alone. And I think that should be vital. I was just talking to Brother Nick Muhammad about that the other day. Like, we don't know the laws of the land. And I think that is something that we should be teaching, you know, young black youth daily, is know the law. Know the law from which you are being governed. That way you know what your rights truly are.
So, you know, Brother Barry, you bring up an interesting point, because I know, well, first of all, let me tell you a little quick story. I used to go to the Wise Men Breakfast, and I think I shared this on the show before, and I would be the youngest fella at the Wise Men Breakfast, and I was invited by Sam Smith. And because I was the youngest person, I would come to the breakfast because they invited me. I felt quite honored to be there, and we had really some brilliant minds, hence the name the Wise Man Breakfast. And so as I would listen to these brothers, former elected officials at different levels from city to state government, business people, and then, of course, you had Sam that was just, you know, kind of like a walking encyclopedia and dictionary. And I would just most of the time listen, just taking it in. And we did this every other week. We had this breakfast on a Friday morning at Grits Cafe, Sister Trina Giles. And so one day a brother walks in, and he's wearing sort of like a fireman's uniform, and he goes to the counter. They point to him where we are. He asks if he could join us, and, of course, they say, you know, who are you? And he tells them, he says, I'm so-and-so, and I'm from the National Safety Office. And so we kind of like National Safety Office. And he says, you know, my job is to travel across, and he's a black guy. He said, my job is to travel across the nation finding black communities and telling them and educating them on disaster preparedness. And he says, because they had done studies and they found out that black communities were the most vulnerable in case of a natural disaster and or a man-made disaster, and that black people were the least prepared. And he says, let me tell you something. He says, if Hoover Dam had a problem and you guys lost electricity, he said, what would you do? He said, because your food is only going to last so long. And because it's a dam, maybe it's a water problem. What are you going to do? But he said, let's just stick with food for a minute. He said, how long do you think your food in your house is going to last you? And he says, and because black people don't have means to protect themselves, because if you get past what they show on TV with the so-called street soldiers, he says, most black households don't have guns. And he says a few of them that have guns don't know how to use the gun, never shot the gun before. And he says when people are hungry, they're going to look for where the food is. And he says, like everything else in America, black people are the ones who support white people. And he says white people have plenty of guns. He said, and guess what? When they get hungry, he said, you know where they're going to turn to? He said, they're going to turn to black communities. And he says, one of the reasons why they're going to turn to black communities is because they know you're vulnerable. And it's been the strong versus the weak. You know, we're talking about law of the jungle where only the strong survive. And he said, they know you do not have a means to defend yourself, and they have plenty of guns. And he says, you might be able to beat them one-on-one. You might even be able to beat two or three because that's just our physical prowess, right? And we typically know how to throw some lefts and rights and maybe even Mike and Ike. But he says, but once they pull out the great equalizer, phallus symbol, he said, once they pull out those guns, he said, you're going to give them that food. And now he says, even if you were able to stockpile food like many of them do, he said, they're not going to want to use their food right away. They're going to want to keep their food and go get more food because they don't know how long it's going to last. And they come into black communities. And unfortunately, whether it's a man-made disaster or a natural disaster, if it's a protracted event, black communities are vulnerable. And one of the reasons why you're vulnerable is because you don't stockpile food. You don't stockpile medicine. But he said the biggest thing is you have no means to protect it, even if you did.
Well, I would say that all of that is intentional, and I think that's part of our issue as a people, though, is that we don't understand the mean intentions of other people and why we don't have. The ego for us is that we believe that we're in control of things that we're not in control of, and we have a lot of egotistical ideas as if we're almost made it. If you take black folks today compared to black people 30 years ago, black folks 30 years ago had a more realistic idea of where they sat in this world. Black people today don't really get it. And you can tell that by the interactions between us. we don't really get it. We don't really understand. So the goal is, how do we, you know, educate our people enough so where we can understand where we sit in this particular society? Where do we sit on this particular food chain? Because if you're at the bottom of the food chain, you probably wouldn't vacation as much. You probably wouldn't splurge and party as much as we do as a people. We party as people that already made it, not as people that should be trying to go get it. The
Bro.
Other thing, Brother Rodney, I was thinking about it when you said it, we don't own enough gun ranges so that we can go practice target practice and have these artillery. White folks can't keep track of who got what. That's another issue that we have. We don't have gun manufacturers. We don't have bullet manufacturers. We talked about all of these things. It's at this point that we don't, it always goes back to, I think Malcolm talked about, the necessities to survive in this country. Do we own the necessities? Do we have a toilet paper manufacturer, right? If we had to wipe our behinds, man, can we do it? You know, and
man, we gonna
that's
have to use
where
Scott.
We struggle. That's where we struggle.
You know, black folks don't use Scott. Black folks go to Scott's, boy. You know, it's in trouble. Trouble, trouble, trouble.
All kinds of cuts.
But no, seriously, though, on a more serious side of what I was saying, you know, you're right, bro. But not only the ownership, to build off what Rodney said, the understanding, the familiarity, the getting acquainted with the usefulness of a firearm. I was talking to a sister the other day. She lives by herself. I was like, "Oh, you got a gun?" She's like, "No." I was like, "How? Why is it? Do you know you can cash and carry a long gun, a shotgun? You know, cash and carry that. You don't have to wait the 7 days. You walk up to the counter at Walmart. You walk up to the counter at Sporting Goods store, whatever. You pay your couple $100, and you walk out same day. You're at home by yourself. There's no way you should be at home by yourself without a weapon. No way.
Ooh, say that again. Say that again.
No way you should be at home by yourself without a weapon. Absolutely not. Why? That's not smart on so many levels. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking to myself the other day, I'm like, yo, I need to spread my ammo out a little. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, yeah, I need to do that. I'll stop there, but I'm like, I need to spread that out a little more. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got to think about this whole thing a little differently. You know what I mean? But it's one of those things, man. Like, we have to see the value in it. And the value in it is truly survival. You know what I'm saying? But is it too not a call to our nature of, you know, we are such a good people that we believe in the greater good, even when we're faced with the fact that the greater good ain't for us. It's not on our side. You know, we're such a forgiving people that we believe that, you know, even when it's bad, there's some good in it. No, it ain't. It's not. It's bad, and it's bad. The bad is bad, and it's going to do nothing but get worse. That's what it is. That's the reality of it. Now, we can either operate from that angle, or we can allow ourselves to be bulldozed and run over. Because we are going to be bulldozed and run over. You know, I noticed when I was in New Orleans a couple of years ago, I was tipping around and I ran across a gun show. And that was the first gun show I ever been to, where I saw more black folks than white folks. The first gun show I ever went to, I wanted to cry. I seriously wanted to cry. I was so proud of our people. I was like, wow. And I'm talking about young black folks. Now, I'm hoping that they were buying the guns for positive activity. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and I'm going to take that as that's what they were doing. But that was the first time I'd ever been to a gun show, and there were more black folks, and I mean a hell of a lot more black folks than white folks, ever. And I was so proud of them folks, so proud of those folks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But why is that not the norm? you know, we can go to Costco, we can go to Sam's Club, we can go to BJ's. I'm sorry, let me finish now. Get you. We can go to Old Navy. If we can't go to the gun store, why not?
Well, because a couple of things. I think, like, historically, if we were told that most of the cowboys out west was black, we would think about guns in a different fashion. If we really, you know, if we talk more about the Deacons for defense versus the Black Panthers, because you got to think about it. The Panther law works two ways. It works well as far as the reading program and the organization, et cetera, but remember, they got killed, most of them. And what do they have? They had guns, right? And so it's like anything, when you teach somebody that the stove is hot, you know, if you get burned by it, people going to run away from it because our people feel like the federal United States government do not want us to have guns. Now, in my opinion, I know about the Deacons for Defense, and I know the Deacons didn't lose anybody, and they were more organized than the Panthers were, maybe less political, but more organized. And so we have had figures or organizations in our time of our people that had guns who did not get murdered and who were able to protect. I think we need more of those stories because the stories with us and guns always end with our death. And so that's something else that we have to look at. You know, the stories of us having guns but then us dying because we have guns, that has an impact on the psyche when it comes to guns for black people.
So it is true that there were laws put in place to prevent black people from having guns.
Guns, there you go. I've never had that I've never had a concept of gun ownership as a negative thing. And I don't know why that is, to be real with you. Maybe it's because I love Star Wars and Star Trek too much. I don't know. Maybe because I love Westerns too much. I don't know. But I never felt the guns gave me power. But I was never the kid on the block. Because I owned a gun. I had a gun at an early age on the block. And I never thought it gave me power. I didn't walk around my chest poked out more or looking for trouble or nothing like that. I always felt it was an equalizer. As Rodney said earlier, you know, it was a great equalizer. If you came at me at a force larger than me, meaning four or five of you at one time, well, that was an equalizer. If you came at me with a gun, I too had a gun. You know, I said that was my biggest defense of a concealed carry in Maryland. Like, yo, look, I don't see a situation in where crime gets out of hand. I actually see a situation where crime gets checked because what you have to understand is now you don't know who you're running up on. You just don't know. And that knowledge is a life or death situation. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I have a gun, and I know I have a gun, but that mug might have a gun too, and I know I'm good. That mug might be better. So now I might be a little more willing to talk this situation out, or I might be a little more willing to just let it go. Because, again, I don't know what you got. You may not have a thing. And you may come out with Rodney, you want that judge? You might bring that judge out. You know what I'm saying? Like, whoa, I wasn't ready for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't ready for that. You may have on your hip, anything. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, I may have a very nice 45 or 40, and then you come out with all the optics and everything on yours. Like, that's not a fair fight. That's not fair. Because, again, I might be good, but you might be better. And when you have all that going on with yours, you 9 times out of 10 going to be better. So,
I want to be clear. I am not, just for the audience here, I am not a person who condones violence, but I am a person who believes if someone is going to war against me, at the end, I want to be the one that goes home to my family and friends and loved ones, because I'm not the one that's going to initiate this type of contact. But before someone mm-hmm. brings it to me, I would much rather be the one, you know, that will put them down. Now, I also tell people I don't mind running from a fight. If I don't have to fight, I do not want to fight. I did too much of that as a child, and I'm a grown man now. But we're being warred against right now. It's just ones here and two there. But it's already happening. And there's a bubble, and at some point it's going to pop. And I'm simply saying that we, as a people, might need to reconsider the stance that we have been told that we should have on weapons. Because if there was, I want you to think about the fear, and I don't know if it was fear or lack of chain of command, but they had about 40 people with guns, with ARs, shotguns, shields, vests, ballistic helmets, and one 18-year-old had an AR, and once he opened up on him, it took them 77 minutes before they finally went in on him. That was one guy with a gun. He shot mm-hmm. over 100 times inside the classroom. Now just imagine we're in a situation where these Yaquita folks decided to do what they want to do before the cops come, and some of them might even be cops, as we saw in North Carolina and in other places, right? When they go on their rampage, and it won't be every place all at once, but something might happen. How are you going to defend yourselves? Because if you have to depend on the cops, we see how the cops responded in Uvalde. Now, I'd like to think that that was a one-off, but when I got my CCW, I remember the guys telling me, he said, look, cops are afraid of guns. He said, and he was a cop teaching CCWs on the side. He said, cops are afraid of guns. The only guns they're not afraid of is the ones that they have. So anybody else who have a gun, cops are afraid. And if they find that there's a situation where there's a gun, usually they're going to try to stay away. But if they have to respond, usually they're responding to put down whoever has the gun, regardless of what their intent is. So he says you have to know, to Brother Barry's point, he said you got to know the laws in your state. And conceal and carry means just that. You have the right to carry a concealed weapon. Make sure you carry it concealed and don't brandish it. That weapon is for your personal defense and defense of your property. It is not for you to go running and playing a rescue ranger for everybody else. And, you know, and so what I tell people is, look, whether you plan on getting a weapon or not, at least learn to Brother Barry's point, learn the laws, and if you decide to make that purchase, go to the class and learn basic gun handling and safety, because the life you save might be your own or it might be your family's. And sometimes, like Brother Lee says, just them not knowing whether you have it might keep them on their side of the line. And that leads into, do we need to rethink our stance on these weapons bans? Because they have them, we don't. If a ban goes into place, that means we won't, because they're not available, and most of them have multiples. What are we going to do? So it's not to advocate one way or the other than I do believe that we should be trained whether we own them or not and understand them. But the world is not how it used to be. And the police, we see that they may come, they may not, or it might be too late. And there's a lot of children in Uvalde that would still be alive today, as well as teachers, if somebody would have done something other than stand around for 77 minutes.
Well,
I would say our problem is more political than anything else for our community, and I'll go back to it. You know, it's the idea. I don't think that people are. I think that it's the idea of being punished as well as the idea of the side of death with us when it comes to guns. I also think it's a part of that, it, for a better lack of word, the retardation of black folks when it comes to citizen rights in this country, right? And so we're always treated as you know, because they fear our strength, what would happen if we do get the guns? What would happen if we do get the economics? So those policies that are in place that a lot of black politicians push down our throat as well is part of the problem. But I honestly believe that in this country, if you cannot protect yourself or protect the things that you own, then you're not a citizen. And, you know, we got people, I always remind my children that Dr. King went to jail. And I always say great men and great women go to jail for causes that they believe in. And we've kind of gotten away from that. Like, what is, you know, what is the worthiness? As Brother Rodney said, hey, I'd rather go back to my family. Yeah, go back to your family. I'd rather deal with that and have that trial versus being the person being buried, right? Especially when you're doing
it either way. Judged by 12, then carried by 6.
And so we have to teach that to our young people because our young people are not being taught that. What our young people are being taught is, you know, guns are bad, stay away from guns, and, you know, call the police. And sometimes when you call the police and you're the one that's in danger, you end up being the target of the investigation. Most times, actually. Not sometimes, most times. Mm.
So the situation in Texas, you know, truly deplorable in all aspects. You know, the more information that comes out, the more horrifying it is to understand that those whom are charged with protecting folks stood around and watched this thing go down. I understand they're human too. They want to go home to their family at the end of the day. I totally understand, you know, but it goes back to something that I think, Rodney, you can get on board with as I say this, you know, service before self. You know, you chose to put yourself in a situation that you know could potentially be life-ending, depending on the situation you get yourself into. You know, depending on the situation you come up on, I should say. And that was your choice. So every day you get strapped up, be it you're a fire person, be it you are a hospital worker, be it you are a police officer, be it you are an armed services member, you understand that day in and day out, that could be your last day. Things happen. If you work in a hospital, you can contract an infectious disease. It could kill you just like that. Look how many people die from COVID. If you work as a firefighter, you could go into a situation that seems stable. A fire could break out. You may have to save a life in that situation, be it a vehicle, a house, a business, whatever. You may not come out of that. They may come out. You may not. That's your choice. That's what you said you wanted to do. That, you know, look, it's like with Mob Deep. Ain't no such thing as halfway. Ain't no such thing as halfway. If you shook, you shook. And if you shook, stay home. Let somebody else do it. Let somebody else do it. But you can't be shook in a situation in which human life is being lost every minute and you just standing around waiting. What you waiting for? Your job is to spring into action. Not stupidly, mind you. It is to be thoughtful. But your job is to mitigate the situation and save as many lives as possible. That is your job. That was your choice. That is your chosen profession. Do your job. Do your job. You know, they had a shield. They didn't want to use that. I mean, come on, dog. But you can shoot an unarmed 12-year-old. You can shoot an unarmed black woman. Well, that's not true. Sandra Brand wasn't shot. But you can throw an unarmed black woman in jail and cause her death. You can.
I mean, that.
Breonna Taylor, you can shoot an unarmed black woman in her sleep, in her bed. You can do all that, but you can't do your actual job. That makes sense to me.
Well, Brother Lee, I think that that's kind of been the thing that I feel like for a while we have not, and especially in my city since George Floyd's death, man, people are lucky if you call the police and the police actually show up, Lee. They may not even show up. They have literally forsaken the people in the city of Minneapolis when it comes to the police. The police does not show up. You're lucky if you get a cop's presence. If something happens, you know, you're pretty much on your own. You and your family are on your own. Do not expect the cops to show up and do anything of the sort as far as making sure you are okay. That's not going to happen. And I say that to say, you know, we have allowed a lot of the bravado from white officials as well as other elected officials about police officers as if they're these brave characters. But how brave can you be when you got to shoot one person 90 times or shoot at a person 90 times or 60 times, right? How brave can you be? That sounds like that sounds fearful to me. And every time you pull out your gun and you shoot someone unarmed, you are using the term that you are scared. Now, I don't know about you or Brother Rodney, but when I hear somebody telling me that they're scared all the time, I couldn't call them brave. Now, I do believe in respecting your adversary, respecting your enemy, the whole nine. I believe in that wholeheartedly, right? I believe you need to respect the situations that you can come across. But if you are the one that has the artillery, you have all of the, you have the system backing you, and you're the one that's going into everything saying, I did this because I was scared, then I can't call you brave, and I can't look at you as if you're a hero. I don't want those types of people equipped with guns protecting anyone, because clearly what they're telling us every time these situations come up is we're scared, we're fearful. Well, it's time for us as citizens, and this goes back to them not responding to the calls. I put it on the people in the community. We have to respond to what we see. And I know people don't want to hear this, but my whole piece about reparations that I've always said is the first reparations piece has to start with us. We have to repair a lot of the things that's wrong in our community. And the first thing is that we have to police our communities. We really have to get back to policing our own and really setting that standard, because without it, we can't depend on anybody else to take care of us. We have to take care of ourselves. And you know what? We may lose some of our own people. It's always going to be those black folks who always want to make themselves the exception. I say we have to be willing to lose those wannabe exceptional Negroes to the West Name. Because, yes, if you have a house full of folks and they smoking weed outside, and I'm always seeing people ride by and they're shooting at your house, you may have kids inside of your home, but why would I want to sacrifice a neighborhood full of kids just for the two kids you may have in your house?
There you go. There you go. Y'all got to go. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you are literally making the block hot.
And we have to get back to that without remorse.
And, you know, we got
we have to get back to that without remorse. Yeah.
We got old people on the block. We ain't shooting up no old people because y'all out here trying to smoke weed and act the damn fool. We ain't doing that. You know what I'm saying? Them old people deserve to ride their lives out in as much peace as they possibly can have or however time they got. You know what I'm saying? And the young people deserve a place in which they can grow up in. That's nurturing. That does not cause them trauma. That they don't turn around and pass down to their children or their children's children. You know, we got to stop this crap someplace, somehow. And, you know, turning on the cheap, what has that done for us? You know what I'm saying? Look, dog, like you said, Brother Barry, a couple of weeks ago, you know, hey, man, if my brother went out here and shot somebody and I knew about it, you know, at some point I got to be like, yo, look, we can't have that in the community. I might snitch that bug out. No, we ain't doing that. We ain't doing that. You know what I'm saying?
No, it has to be that way. But I think that that's where I think collectively, when Brother talks about the guns and all of that, I feel like that's where we have to be with everything. We have to be what we have to take an inventory, and we have to talk about how do we survive. And we need to, you know, Brother Rodney, if you're still on, you know, we need a survival manual. We need a survival manual, Brother Rodney.
Can we start with sleep in that survival manual? Yeah.
Well,
getting enough sleep.
Well, hey, listen, Brother Lee. Well, Lee, they say that black men actually have the highest level of cortisol. And so we're stressed more in our sleep than any other group. And part of it is because of the society that we live in.
Don't tell Rodney that.
So sleep for black men could be deadly. Brother Rodney,
don't tell
Rodney
that.
About this before on Rant Radio, Brother Rodney. Did we talk about that with Dr. Jordan Gordon?
Don't tell Rodney.
Saying that?
Yes, but, sir. Yes, sir.
So
hey,
you know, we're even in our dreams,
there,
yeah, I'm throwing shade.
Well,
I'm throwing shade. Don't tell Rodney that.
Well, Rodney do need to get his sleep, but I would say that Brother Rodney deals with a lot, and I'm pretty sure he's an empath. He's empathetic for all the people that he see and the things that's happening out there in Vegas with our people. And a lot of times it's hard for people like Brother Rodney to get rest because he's always trying to figure out a way that he can solve and help our people. But I think that we need to come up with a manual manuscript across the land. On how we can survive, because 2035 is the target mark right now. We're 13 years away. They said the average medium household income for African Americans would be at a net zero. It don't seem that way. I know with all the BBLs and teeth jobs and vacations.
Can
that
we talk about
on.
That? Can we talk about that? No, seriously. I mean, what the hell is going on with these women out here? Look. I am a booty man. I make no qualms about it. But ain't nothing worth you risking your life for a booty. It ain't worth it. It's not. I don't understand what you're missing. I don't understand how we have failed you, sisters. But it's not. That ain't, it's not the move, it's not the look, you know, freak the money aspect of it, because you're still talking about dang near 10 grand. Even if you get it done overseas, it's still dang near 10 grand. You know, we can do a whole lot with that 10 grand. Freak that part. I'm talking about your health. We need you. We don't need you dying on some hospital operating table in Mexico or DR or Dominica or wherever. We don't need that. We don't. Mm. We see you for all the beauty that you have and that you are. Every key is not meant for every lock. That doesn't mean it's a bad key. That doesn't mean it's a bad lock. Every key is not meant for every lock. Take your time, find your key, and then open yourself up and give fully. But that right there, nah, man. That, look. The memes going around about Little Kim. I don't know why that sister feels the way she feels about herself, but she was a beautiful girl. When she came on the scene, she was such a beautiful girl. And to see her now, it really is heartbreaking. I don't know what it is or what it was that she didn't like about herself. But it's heartbreaking. She was a beautiful girl. And to look at her now, it really is. It's heartbreaking. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if anybody could have said anything to change her mind. I don't know if anybody could have did anything to change her mind. But she went under the knife one too many times. And she truly is dang near unrecognizable. And that's sad. I don't want to see anybody.
So I was dating this sister a couple of years ago. I mean, this girl is a 10 on all accords. Skin complexion, chocolate, body shape, very, very on point. And she had an obsession with getting her a nose job, a butt job, and even sometimes complaining about her lips.
Why?
Man, brother. Let me tell you the whole story. She was a diabetic, and so she went to the doctor here, the plastic surgeon here. The plastic surgeon told her, I will not perform any surgery on you whatsoever. Your body type is 0.7% away from being ideal perfect. 0.7, not 1%, Lee, 0.7. He said your phenotype, your phenotype, you're off the scales. There's no need. He said, even if you came with the 15,000, my office, we will reject it. She went to the DR and got it done. And it looks like she got some butt work done as well as some other things done. And I say this to say, it is something about self-hate and self-loathing that we do not get. And I feel like the messages that some of us interpret and what we hear is part of the problem. A lot of us just don't love ourselves. And what I'm hearing from sisters who, a couple of sisters I know, who are in these chats, I be telling these brothers about these groups that these black women got, the black men aren't privy to. That a lot of these sisters that's running around here getting these BBLs and these breast jobs and everything else, the men that are with them are leaving them by the truckloads.
Mm.
Men don't even, brothers don't even want to be bothered with them.
So, Brother Barry, you bring up an interesting point, because when I've talked to sisters about this, and I believe that, you know, it's the sister's body, and if she want to do it, you know, that's her thing. Unfortunate for little Kim from my perspective, but I don't know what's going on in her mind. I don't know how healthy it is for her to hear us talk about her by name so much. So I think that we should be very cautious about that, because we might be doing more harm to her and others. But what sisters told me, they said, Rodney, but we do what men want, though. The brothers want the big booties. The brother wants the this, the that. And a lot of the reasons why we do it. Now, some of them say they do it because that's just what they want. But then I have to peel the onion back and say, why is it that that's what you want? Because that why is important. Because oftentimes the why goes back to the same thing, is that they want to be appealing for whatever mate, whatever gender that is. But not always. Some of them say they want to do it because that's how they want to do it for themselves. But the reality of it is the black female, I mean, it's black people in general, but an added burden has been on black women on their look. Because remember, the standard of beauty was the twiggy type. Because remember, it's that skinny chick with really hips, no booty, right? Maybe some big boobs, but no hips, no booty, and light hair and light complexion with long hair. And so sisters have gone through all kinds of machinations to meet these unreasonable and in some cases almost unreachable ideas of the American beauty standard. And to Brother Barry's point, a lot of this is the lack of knowledge. It truly is. It's written in the Bible, my people will perish because of the lack of knowledge. And if you're not into any of the Abrahamic religions or philosophy, because you don't have to be into the religion to understand some of the life points that are in these books. But because a number has been done on African Americans and especially black women on that beauty standard. And if you don't believe me, remember the Dahl test back in the 50s that was recreated by CNN and in modern times, and it gave us the same result. So I don't put this so much on the women. This is a societal issue, and we as black men shouldn't buy into it, because oftentimes we find that our women want to be attracted to us, and they say, well, brothers, you complain about us doing this stuff. You complain about us doing this stuff, but when we see them pictures on your phone, when we see what you're looking at in those internet pages, it's of people with long, straight hair, lighter complexion, big booty, big boobs, big hips.
Brother Rodney.
So
Brother Rodney.
We try to meet you there. So
nah,
I don't want
to. I got I got to push back on you on that.
So what I'm saying
I got to push back on you on that.
And then I'll leave it, is from a societal perspective, there is an image projected of what the American beauty standard is that
mm-hmm.
black men and black women have played into it, and we know it's true because when each of these doll tests were done, black people, our children, and then later they did it with older people, and the same result, rejected themselves. So I just wanted to put that out on the table. And yes, Brother Barry, what's your pushback?
I got three pushbacks on this. And the first pushback is that when you think about the doll test, the standard was white beauty. That's the first thing. And so if we finding white beauty as being aesthetically pleasing, they would be doing the opposite from getting a butt job. The other side that I would push back on too is
Lee,
to put
we
it
hear
on
you
black
in the background,
men,
brother.
You don't have a higher than honor.
Lee, hit the mute button, Lee.
Oh, you probably can't hear. I know he was on his headphone earlier.
Okay.
And so the other side of it too is, Brother Rodney, when we have such a large portion of our sisters now that's practicing lesbianism, it's hard to put that on black men as well, because from what I'm hearing from a lot of the sisters is a lot of what's being pushed on them about beauty now is not, they've kind of turned off brothers as far as their sounding. That's not what they're paying attention to. This is pretty much more the standard that they have for themselves. And, you know, so I don't want to make it as just a black male thing where black men are looking at, because I think that sometimes that's the escape hatch that sisters, and this goes back to the lack of accountability. If everything that's wrong with our community is black men, then black man is the problem. And I just don't buy that. I don't see that, because a lot of these sisters get those things and they go get a white man. And we're not going to say that, we're not going to blame Bill for Teresa having a big butt. And so I just, in my opinion, I feel like we blame black men for everything, and then we were dealing with sisters that were dealing with heterosexual normatives more so than we have now, I would say okay. But since we have such a large portion of our sisters who focus on lesbianism as well as bisexualism, I believe that this is just a lot about sexual perversions more so than the standard for black men. And I would also say that it used to be a black norm, and y'all both know this, growing up in this hip-hop era, being from the East Coast, the black folks, we were predicated on what's real versus what's phony. It's always been our culture. Our culture has been about realness. So in one minute, we were saying that we're responsible for it, but when the root of what our culture is based on is realness, then that this a butt job, a breast job, a nose job, a lip job, some skin lightening, that's anti who we are. So that's not about us. Now, do we like big butt? Yeah. But if you're telling me if you got a chance at me alone, you going to pass up on me alone? You going to pass up on right, you gonna pass up on sister Regina King, because they ain't got no big – all of you black women in Hollywood, they don't have big butts, Brother Rodney. Taraji P. Henson don't have
Regina
no
King.
Big butts. She, they all got nice shapes as far as they're athletically built, but they don't have super big butts, and that's usually who brothers fawn over. Now, if we like big butts, that's fine. But I don't see brothers hitting the gym in overdrive because sisters are talking about the body issue on Sports Illustrated and pointing out one of the brothers that's built. So to me, I feel like when we do that.
We have 90 seconds left.
Huh?
We got 90 seconds left.
I don't want brothers to take the onus on this, Brother Rodney.
So my last comment on that is it's a societal mm-hmm. issue, and black people, black men, are a part of society, and we should listen to our sisters. It's not to say that we're to blame or that we need to accept the blame, but we should listen to our sisters because this is a cry, and we need to listen to that cry.
Well, I want to say this. Sisters, you are beautiful just as you are. All the additives and preservatives, we don't need. We just need to be you know what I'm saying? True that, man. Like I said, every key isn't for every lot. Find your key. find your key. Thank you all for joining. Thank you, Sister Rashi. Appreciate that. Brother Barry, appreciate you popping in today. Look, let's talk, man. Are you coming here for the Notre Dame Navy game? Let's talk about that. And we got a couple other things to discuss. Brother Rodden, get some sleep. Talk to you later. You all be good. You all be safe. As we always end about this time, we love you, man. The damn thing you can do about it. Peace.